Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. Fresh from the 31st Scarlet Stiletto Awards night, and a gala night it was, 2024, just a week or so ago, is today's story. Lily Pilly, Don't Be Silly, by Nikki Lee Taylor. First prize, Scarlet Stiletto Award. On my 16th birthday, in the frigid black water of the lake behind our house, with weeds crawling up my legs and 1,000 stars staring down, I held my breath and killed Lily Pillerman. My parents were sad, but not surprised. She always was a murderous little child. That's what I expected my mother to say. And it wouldn't be the first time she called me that, because it wasn't the first time I chose death over life, darkness over the light. I was 9 years old the first time she screamed it at me. She came in from doing the groceries and found me resting on my elbow, a curtain of blonde hair falling over my face, as I stared at our goldfish Hubert, gasping his final breath on the surface of our dining room table. He was one of those round orange fish with a tail like a peacock. He flipped around, back and forth, his desperate mouth in the shape of an O, those flat fish eyes staring at me. My mother screamed and scooped Hubert up, quickly plopping him back into the bowl. "Why did you do that?" she shrieked, her face white with rage. "What were you thinking?" "Hubert was sick," I said flatly. "It's better this way." "But you just sat there watching him die." "He wanted to." She stared at me, her face twisted, repulsed. "You murderous little child, I'm taking you to see someone. This is not normal behaviour, and I'm telling your father when he gets home." She stared at me a moment longer, then shook her head and stomped off down the hall, leaving me alone with the dying goldfish. When she was out of sight, I climbed down off the chair and peered at him, floating along the top of the water like a sad bobbing cork. The shimmer of his shiny scales, the delicate texture of his fins. I pressed my finger against the glass until the tip turned white, just wanting to be closer, to feel the life leaving his body. Once he was dead, I remember thinking how peaceful Hubert looked, how relieved. He'd been struggling in the bowl for days, pushing his way up to the surface, only to have a ghostly arm pull him back down into the depths. Even at 9 years old, I knew nothing should have to live like that. Not even a fish. I can't recall exactly when I decided to kill her. There were so many moments that contributed to what happened out on the lake. From the time I was old enough to realize how sickly she was, the way her crepey skin looked translucent in the sun, how she never stood tall like all the other girls, I knew she'd be better off dead. I hated the dark blue veins that crawled along the inside of her hands. There were times I would just stare at them, unable to believe that such a young girl could already have hands like my mother. My father was a doctor. I wasn't there, at least I don't remember being there, when they decided he should be her doctor. I guess it made sense. I didn't think anything of it. Maybe I should have. He worked in the surgery down on Main Street, but there was also a small consult room downstairs at home, and sometimes after school, Lily would be in there for what felt like hours. For the most part, I just blocked it out. Mum did too, I think. Every so often I'd hear or see something, but most of the time I'd go somewhere else in my head and pretend it wasn't happening, that she didn't exist. "Now say it after me," he'd tell her in the hall. "Lily Pilly, don't be silly." Sometimes she'd be crying. He'd always tell Mum it was because the treatment caused mild discomfort. And it did, for all of us, only there was nothing mild about it. I blamed her, especially as I got older. By the time I was 12, I was certain the whole ugly thing was her fault. My dad was the bravest, smartest, most incredible man I knew. He looked after us, cooked barbecues that made the kitchen smell like Sundays, and helped sick people get well again. It had to be her fault he was being like that. Something about her made him do it. Now and then during the summer, I'd think we were free of it. Days would go by, weeks, sometimes months. Periods when the sun felt warmer on my skin and the sky was a cerulean blur, stretching out to touch the horizon. But as soon as we exhaled, the clouds would gather and she'd blow in on the wind, the entire house shivering as whispers of Lily Pilly crept back along the hallway. I never found out what was wrong with her or why she was so sick. I'd seen rows of medication with her name scrawled in his handwriting across the label. Lillian Pillerman, Lillian Pillerman, Lillian Pillerman. There was no doubt in my mind that she was born broken. Why else would he have to try so hard to hold all her pieces together? I think that's part of why I hated her so much. Her frailty, the delicate angles of her, like pieces of glass just waiting to be dropped. She was weak, and an animalistic part of me wanted to punish her for it. Sometimes when I was little, I used to hurt Lily. I would wait until no one was around, savouring the intoxicating rush of knowing what I was about to do to her. I'd steal the lighter Mum used for the cooktop, and after her appointment, when she went to the bathroom, I'd hold it against the pale flesh of her thigh while she sat on the toilet crying. I loved pressing my hand against her mouth, feeling the graze of her teeth against my fingers as I muffled her screams. The release was euphoric. But even as I breathed in the sweet, streaky scent of her burning skin, I knew I wanted more. I wanted to cut her open and see what was under that ghostly white skin. What would escape if I tried to free her? Eventually, Mum caught me. She grounded me for a month and said, "You have to try and be kind. If I catch you doing that again, I'll tell your father." She knew that always worked on me, the threat of telling Dad. I still worshipped him, even then. The very idea he might ever look at me with anything less than dream-lit eyes was enough to pull me instantly into line. On and off over the years, I tried to like Lily. I'd sit on my bed and stare at her, desperate to find something I didn't hate. Her hair was stringy from all the medication, her eyes dull and uninviting. When I tried to ask her questions, she never answered. Instead, she just stared back at me with a strange curiosity, as though she was seeing me for the first time. "What's wrong with you?" I'd ask. "Why aren't you like the other kids at school?" But she never answered. And I'd just sit there until Mum came in with a plate of cut-up oranges. I don't know why. I never ate them. My room was the only place I ever spoke to Lily out loud, and she had no friends at school. Teenage girls have an innate skill when it comes to identifying potential victims, and in that sense, Lily shone bright like a star. Drysdale High was a public school, a place where only the strong survived. I kept my head down as each day they tormented her, name-called her. They even slut-shamed her, unaware the only hands to ever touch that milky skin of hers were my dad's while she was in his consult room. There were times I thought about saying something, telling them to stop, but I knew it would only make things worse, so instead I just stayed silent and let them do it. Online it was even worse. The trolling was incessant. After school I would lay on my bed and swallow every word, her heart balanced delicately between my teeth as I devoured their ridicule. I would read and reread until I swelled up, taut and tight, every part of me throbbing with anger. Eventually my skin would burst and then I'd cry. I would bury my head in the pillow and sob for Lily. Violent, rage-filled tears that felt like they could drown out the entire world and everyone in it. There were things about Lily, things they didn't know. The kinds of things that lived in the dark and the quiet. Wicked things kept hidden behind closed doors and cheeks that turned the other way. In those fleeting moments of empathy, through my tears, I imagined the girl Lily might have been. I imagined her as a poet, a pretty girl with a ponytail that swung like a pendulum, counting the days until she found true love. Until a boy her own age would touch and kiss her, tell her she was beautiful. But that's the thing about hate. It's insidious. It grows and spreads, infecting everything it touches, until an entire school decides they want you dead. It was the last year of high school when Jenny Lambert started the social media group. She called it, "Lily Pillerman Should Go Kill Herself." And by 3 p.m. that day, it had 120 members. By 5 p.m, it had grown to 240. By 9 p.m, more than 800 people wanted Lily to kill herself. Most had never even met her. They wrote comments on how she should do it, slashing her wrists, hanging herself, an overdose. One even suggested she should jump off the roof at school so everyone could watch. More than once my thumb hovered over the comment button. Any one of those ideas would work, but I knew better. That's not how Lily should die. She was a quiet girl with graceful limbs and watery eyes. She had a way of lapping against you like the tide, pulling you in, then pushing you back with her silence. I hated her. I wanted her to die too, but not for the same reason they did. Lily scared the kids at school because she was different. They didn't understand her. They sensed there was something strange about her, and to them that justified calling for a sacrifice. But not me. I hated Lily because I saw myself reflected in her eyes. The things he did and said, the goosebumps as his hand brushed bare skin, the disgusting delight that no one should ever feel. One afternoon I stopped scrolling, put the phone down and closed my eyes. It would be doing her a favour. Everyone hated her. She was feeble and she was broken. Despite all my dad's treatment and tablets, she was only getting sicker. No one should live like that. Not even Lily Pilly. I thought back to Hubert's scaled body, bobbing up and down in the bowl, bloated and sickly. Killing him had been the right thing to do. Just like the baby bird I'd found squawking and flailing on the ground after the westerly wind that blew Mum's towels from the line. Just like the black and white tabby cat that had been limping around the streets for weeks, and the dog next door they made sleep out in the cold and rain. Murderous little child. My mother's words echoed through my mind. She didn't understand. She could never understand. Sometimes killing was kindness. I felt sorry for Lily, just like I had for Hubert the goldfish and all the other animals I'd saved from their pitiful lives. Not everyone knows this, but when something dies, if you're close enough, you can feel it. That moment when a heart stops beating and the light leaves their eyes. People are so afraid of death. But they needn't be. It's transcendent, divine. Life is a child, but death is a master. The saddest part about Lily was the tether around her wrist. Her body was alive, but she was a ghost, a phantom drifting across the water, just waiting to be set free. She wanted that release. I could see it in her eyes. Everyone in Lily's life had let her down, but not me. I was going to save her. On the night she died, there were bruises along Lily's right arm. It was winter, the sky pushing down, an audience of twinkling eyes watching my every move. As we walked through the long grass, I glanced down at the dark shadows around her wrist and forearm. Four fingers that would be forever hanging on, trying to keep her here. Was that how adults loved, I wondered? As people grew older, did they panic? Holding on too tight, like vampires draining the life and vitality out of anyone within reach. Sometimes I felt like it was about that for him. A monstrous and desperate clutch at youth, an ache to feel it pulse through him. With every vacant-eyed gasp and thrust, maybe he felt closer to immortality somehow. I guess I'd never really know for sure. I adored my dad, but he had drained the life out of Lily Pilly. He'd sucked her dry, leaving only a husk swaying in the cold night air. None of the medication in any of those bottles would ever erase what he did to her or what her mother had chosen to ignore. There was no pill in the world that could treat something like that. I stretched up as high as I could, my fingertips brushing the velvet sky. I filled my pockets with stars, enough to light my way, then stepped into the inky water, deeper and deeper, until it lapped around my waist. The crickets fell silent and the moon retreated behind a cloud. I shivered and thought about rubbing my arms, but why bother? Instead, I sank into the cold black lake, knowing it was on its way. The moment when my heart would stop beating and the light would leave my eyes. Lily Pilly, don't be silly. It's what he would say to me when I started to cry. Lily Pilly, don't be silly. His way of minimizing the barbaric way he touched me. Lily Pilly, don't be silly, I love you. But it was a lie. Love is not a cage or a concoction of drugs to try and make you forget. Real love is letting go. It's seeing another's pain and removing it. I might have been only 16, but I knew what love was. And that night, for the first time, I allowed myself to feel it. For so long, I had blamed myself for what he did. I separated myself from the girl who stepped into that room, shivering as an invisible breeze drifted over the most delicate parts of her skin. In those moments, I wasn't Lily Pillerman. I was Lily Pilly, a girl in desperate need of salvation, a girl who had never known love a day in her life. But tonight, I would love her. I would save her. I would set her free. In the frigid black water of the dam, at the back of our house, with weed crawling up my legs and 1,000 stars staring down, I held my breath and killed Lily Pillerman, murderous little child. The end. I've really enjoyed narrating these 70 episodes of Scarlet Stiletto Bites. Every story's had its own challenges for me, and every story has been a prize winner for excellent writing. But sometimes I feel the loneliness of the long-distance narrator. I want and I need more feedback to share your responses to the stories. I'm taking a break for a few weeks. I may be back in 2025 with more Scarlet Stiletto Award winners. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creative.